Where motoring starts. This is Behind the Wheel.
G'day folks, Simon live from Behind the Wheel, and today we have the host of Gears, Grease and Glory on Discovery Turbo, Mark Priestley. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, how are you?
Not too bad. On the show, you travel the world and meet people involved with amateur motorsports. How do you find that this compares with your travels during your time in Formula One?
Well, I mean, completely different, really. I mean, obviously the travel I was well used to, but actually going to these types of motorsport where you don't have any of the kind of facilities and the equipment and the number of people or the resources that I was used to in Formula One, and you really have to be kind of quite ingenious in how you manage to build these cars on such a tight budget and with none of those things to hand. So it was a real challenge in that respect, but that was kind of why I did it in the first place, because that's why I really wanted to have a proper crack at something that was so far removed from what I've been used to for so long.
I see. Yeah, it is. I mean, not to say that it's easy, but you know, when you have the resources and the money, it does make it somewhat more seamless to put a car together. But when you're working on a shoestring budget, it does make it harder. So did you find that, like you said, some of the ingenuity that these amateurs have shown because of their lack of resources really blew you away?
Yeah, it did. It really did, actually. Some of the guys were incredibly passionate about what they were doing, you know, on a very similar level in terms of the dedication and the passion to what I was used to in Formula One. So, you know, I was an incredibly competitive person. My life in Formula One probably made me that way, and I was always desperate to win and to be as competitive as I could be. These guys were exactly the same, and it felt to me like, even though it was a very different world with some of these types of motorsport, we were still pushing whatever vehicle it was that we were working with, we were still pushing it to its absolute limits. The limits may be at a sort of slightly different level, but we were pushing what we had to the absolute limit. And I was really impressed with the way that these groups of guys worked well together as teams and how they came up with solutions to problems, as you say, without being able to sort of throw lots of people at it or lots of money at it. And it was quite inspiring, really. And, you know, that was kind of why I got involved I fell in love with Formula One in the first place, was the fact that people were able to be a lot more creative back in the old days in Formula One.
Yeah.
If you look back at old Formula One footage, you see sort of six-wheeled cars racing around or cars with giant fans on the back, which I used to find, you know, incredible creativity, incredible ideas that people had the freedom to come up with. In modern times, the regulations in Formula One have become so kind of tight and restrictive that actually
yes.
You don't get the opportunity to do those things. So going back to this grassroots motorsport where the only thing restricting you is your own kind of creativity, I really found that a joy to be part of. And some of these people I worked with, as I say, were actually really inspiring.
Yeah. So, I mean, despite your own experience, you yourself would have learned some stuff. And what was the most creative solution that you came across?
Yeah, it's really tricky, actually. I mean, it was definitely a sort of two-way exchange. And I went into this project thinking, you know, I have a lot of experience with motor racing. I have a lot of experience with different types of motor racing vehicles. And I kind of went into it thinking that, you know, this is going to be a lot about me taking my skills to these guys around the world and trying to help them. I mean, the reality was that I learned probably as much from them as they, I would like to think they learned from me. It was a real exchange of knowledge. And I mean, I think some of the things that impressed me most were the sort of manufacturing or the engineering skills that some of these guys had without the equipment, you know, some of the tools and equipment that we had. I mean, I remember, to give you an example, we went to Sweden to do something called folk racing, which is a bit of a sort of rallycross type event. And these guys working in a real sort of back street type garage, trying to update or replace the camshaft in their engine to give more performance levels. Now, normally in my world, to do that, we would buy the most expensive camshaft you can find, the highest performance one. But they couldn't do that because of budgetary restrictions. And so this guy had come up with a machine which was like a sort of key copying machine. So he put in one high-performance camshaft that he had, and over the years he was able to use this machine just to replicate that and take out a standard camshaft, put in this homemade machine that he's made up from bits of his kind of kitchen and whatever he had lying around. And it would replicate the profiles on the camshaft onto his sort of bog standard camshaft, which he then put back in the engine. And I mean, these are precision bits of equipment that in my world of Formula One, you wouldn't ever dream of doing anything like that. And actually, over the years, he perfected this technique and he got it to work. And it actually, you know, worked very, very well for us for almost no money.
It really shows that you can, like, there's many ways to skin a cat. Does it surprise you that, like, the type of driving or the type of car culture that is adopted in the particular areas that you go to? Because they're also varied, but people tend to gravitate towards a particular thing.
Yeah, and it's some of them were so interesting that they have a huge culture behind them, as well as the passion for whatever the car or whatever the vehicle was. The whole sort of movement around that scene was incredibly kind of passionate and moving. And we went to South Africa, we went to Johannesburg in South Africa and did an event called spinning, the car spinning, which again is something I hadn't really heard of. And you know, for me, I equated it to the guys doing burnouts and spinning the back wheels of the car through the smoke and eventually the tyres burst. So, you know, that's how it looks from the outside when I first looked it up on kind of YouTube, you know, before going. And the reality was that, too, it's this massive movement in Joburg and in South Africa, which all stems back to some of the apartheid days when there was real difficulties in the travel in the country. The cars that they used, these old box-shaped BMWs, were actually stemmed from the days when they used to go have you know, big gang culture, and they used to regularly go to funerals of members of their gang and spin these cars at the funerals. And, you know, today it's all become sort of legalised and now done safely in arenas, but everybody knows that this sport was born from these really dark and difficult times in South Africa. And actually it means a huge amount to these people, and we went there as kids. Young kids, 6 and 7 years old, out in the streets, they have a dream of growing up and being car spinners and performing in these arenas, and that's what they grow up wanting to be. And, you know, it's quite moving, actually, that one.
Yeah.
Knowing how much passion there is around these vehicles, which to me, if I saw one of these cars in the street in the UK, you know, I'd barely look twice at it because you see them all the time, and to me, it's just an old car. But actually, for these guys, it makes so much. And the passion and the enthusiasm and dedication around them was quite moving. And it kind of changed the way that I looked at these things, really, because, you know, it's not, some of these vehicles are not just a big pile of sort of metal. They actually mean an awful lot more to the people that use them than I would have originally given credit for. So
yeah, it's not just a machine. It actually brings people together.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a real thing for the community to focus around, and because it had been made into this sort of safe and legal form of motorsport, actually it was doing a huge amount of good for the community because they were coming to organised events, whereas perhaps years ago it was all being done sort of slightly dodgily on street corners and without very many safety regulations in place. Now it was actually a real positive focus for the kids and the youth of these areas. So I mean that one in South Africa particularly, but there were others too, that really kind of changed my opinion of these things and saw what good it can do to a community like that.
For those of the listeners who don't know, at the top of each week you set yourself a project to make a competitive vehicle of your own. What was the most interesting or unique experience that you had on your journeys?
I had so many. I mean, the entire series was genuinely just so much fun to make. I mean, I had the absolute time of my life. And I'll never forget, I've made an awful lot of friends in these places I went to. South Africa, as I said, was really quite moving. And I think when we get to see that episode, we'll see that, just the community of these kids coming out in the street and being in awe of these cars that we were playing with. But And I made some great friends, as I say. The teams of guys that I worked with were genuinely really, really good. But I think my favourite was either South Africa, where we did the car spinning. I also went to Mexico, which was another fantastic experience, and so lucky to be part of this. But we went to Mexico and did something called hoppers with lowriders, results of 1950s type cars, which we bounced 6 feet up in the air, 7 feet up in the air. It was an amazing experience. You're seeing this enormous car, which weighs 2 tons, 3 tons, whatever, and it's bouncing, and the front end is bouncing up way above your head. And it's something that you look at and think, a car should not be doing that.
Yeah.
And yet you're controlling it with this button in your fingertips. And the engineering side of that I found absolutely fascinating.
I have to ask you about that episode. When you fried that Mexican guy's car and started the fire, were you genuinely scared for your life?
Yes, I was. I mean, I know what it's like. I know what it's like to put so much kind of blood, sweat and tears into a vehicle. And these guys, it's their absolute pride and joy, these cars. And I was having my first ever try at bouncing this chap.
You got the timing wrong.
I had to go quite reluctantly. And I kept my finger on the button for too long, and the electrical surge going through the battery set fire to the cabling in the back. And I was terrified because I was watching.
They're a tough-looking bunch.
It was quite an experience, but the reality was all these guys were great fun, and the fact that they allowed me to come in and join their group, says a lot about what they wanted to get from the experience. Because, as I said before, it was really a two-way exchange. And Lenny's guys were so passionate about what they were doing, about their car culture, that actually they really wanted to share that with me. As well as, I hope I did bring something to most of them, so they learned something from me and have taken something away. But the teams of guys were actually really, really great and embraced me coming along as well.
Anyway, Gears, Grease and Glory is on next Friday, the 3rd of June, on Discovery Turbo. Thanks for chatting with us, Mark Priestley.
My pleasure. Thank you. BehindTheWheel.com.au